What's up, everybody? It's Sam with Rowdy Alternative. And today we are joined by Chrislyn Arthurs, an artist out of Oklahoma. How you doing?
I'm good. How are you? Thanks for having me.
Good, good. You've been keeping busy. What you been up to?
Been really busy. I don't think we've had a weekend off since February. This is actually our first 3 weeks off, and we're going to enjoy it.
Nice. Just been playing a lot of shows or in the studio or what?
Yeah, we've done a little bit of both. Like I said, I recorded a few songs and put a few more out. Tried something new. I tried to release like 3 songs within 2 weeks of each other. And I don't know, could be a flop, could be sabotage, but I know you're supposed to wait, but I'm too impatient. Once I get something done, I'm ready for it to be out. So other than that, we've just been hitting the road really hard.
Right on. So is that something that artists think about a lot, like the duration of which they release singles and stuff?
Well, I think so. So I'm an independent artist. I don't really have any kind of guidance. So I've been putting out music since 21, and some of it's been really successful and some of it hasn't. So I guess I'm just kind of playing with the waters to see what works and what doesn't. First and foremost, I'm a songwriter before an artist. So some of my music that I've put out probably doesn't really match our live shows. But so just trying everything I can just to see what sticks.
Right on. So let's back it up a bit just so people get to know a little bit about you, and we could start from the beginning, I guess. So when you first started playing music, or when you first started doing it for a, for a career path, what was the scene like back then? Like, was there anyone you were looking to like want to aim to be towards, or like what was the music scene around where you live? What was it like?
So I'll be really honest. I've done this professionally for the last 10 years here in Oklahoma, and even in Texas and Kansas, there were not a lot of female musicians out there. And, a lot of the ones that were out, they weren't really touring really hard, or they were just playing, the coffee shop bar dives that would let them in. And, I found a lot of the people that when we were trying to book and get out in these places, they were like, we don't book females, because they just stereotype that females just play sad love songs, and we're a little bit different. And so I've worked really hard to try and break that barrier and kind of let them know that women can kick ass just like men. So,
sure.
But really, there weren't a lot of females out there up until probably the last 3 years. I've really started seeing a lot more females in Oklahoma in the music scene. That's really cool to see.
Yeah, absolutely. It's now that you brought it up, I was wanting to talk to you about that a bit, about the issues with the females in country music scene and everything. And I've talked to like Gracie York and like Holly Beth, and they're fantastic, and they've been around not quite as long as you have, but like it's cool to see them pop, and you too, like as of late and everything. And just for someone who might not know or understand how the industry works, or like the bias in the industry, and even me, like sometimes I'm trying to piece together like what the issues are, as a female artist, can you kind of explain like what the issue is there, like with the country industry and the opportunities you guys are missing out on?
I definitely don't have all the answers, but firsthand experiences, a lot of the guys started from like college, or, they all hang out and kind of just cut their teeth together. So they, they're pretty loyal and honest, and they don't break away from, what they know and what works for them. But also we've run into a lot of, the guys bring the girls and the girls bring the guys kind of stereotype when they're booking shows and selling tickets. So, I've actually had people make comments where they say, well, women are jealous, so they're not going to want their man looking at a girl up on stage. And I was like, well, maybe they're not there to look at the girls. Maybe they're there to listen to the music. So I don't know. It's I don't really have the answers to it. I wish I did. I know we've tried to work with several male artists regionally, and I don't know if they just are wanting males on their bills or kind of what they're wanting. So, you know, I send email after email after email, and I don't know if I'm too late trying to get on with some of them or if our style just doesn't match. But a lot of times, every time I see an artist get added, 99% of the time it's a male.
Okay. Yeah. That's kind of a shock for me, because like I've heard about it, and I know there was a big thing with Miranda Lambert. I could be wrong. Like a couple years ago, I think Miranda Lambert had something, like she was very outspoken about the issue too. And seeing that in like the mainstream landscape, that's where it's the loudest. But like hearing about it, like with Texas and Red Dirt, like that, those smaller scenes that, you know, or more of a community based, and hearing that that's kind of stuff still happens, that's kind of disturbing, you know, like that's not something that I didn't see going on, like from who I was around out there. So like that's crazy to, you know, to know that now.
I will say there's a lot of, and like I said, I'm not trying to bash on the industry or anything like that. This is just what I've experienced for the last 10 years. Is a lot of festivals really don't have a lot of females on their bill. There was a really big festival happening here in Oklahoma, and there was one female, maybe two, and they're all the way at the very bottom. You have to really look for their name, you know, and it's disheartening to see that they don't add more talented females on, you know, the lineups and things like that. So I will say Nashville has really started making a change and adding more females to their tours and the festival bills. And I think they're heading in the right direction. I'm just ready for Oklahoma and Texas to kind of get up on there too.
Yeah, for sure. For sure. Yeah. Well, I mean, I guess all you could say is I hope it turns around. You know, I don't know, like, what are some answers, you know, anything that could like help out at all, like that people, like as fans at least, like can do, I guess, see some shows and everything.
Yeah, so buy tickets. It's free to share people's music, so even if you know, don't want to buy their music on iTunes or can afford to buy a ticket or a t-shirt, just share their music, and word of mouth has done more for me than anything that I could ever do on the internet or marketing or anything like that. So just tell your friends.
Yeah, absolutely. Hell yeah. Cause yeah, we don't want that bullshit to keep going on, especially especially in like our scenes that we all like to listen to, like the mainstream, like that's kind of like whatever flows and happens there happens, but like you still kind of have a control on the smaller niches. So,
it's so crazy because the majority of your really big cuts by these artists are written by women. So I'm just like, hey, girls can write and sing songs too.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. You have a great point there. But now that we're on, actually, now that you brought up songwriting, so is that, you mentioned that you consider yourself a songwriter before an artist, right? Like a, you know, performer or whatever. So when did you realize you had a knack for songwriting and all that? When did you want to take the dive into that world?
I think I had just turned 20. So I haven't been doing this my whole life, like a lot of people that you hear tell the stories. I haven't. Yeah, I grew up singing karaoke, but I had met with a gentleman when I was about 20 years old, and I was really curious on getting into the music industry. I had no idea what to do. I'm from a little bitty town with 900 people, and you either farm or you go to college and you leave and never come back. but college was not for me. And I met with a man who used to work for Sony, and he's actually from Medford and lived in Nashville, worked for Sony for several years, and then moved back. Well, I had a meeting with him, and I just played a Sam Riggs song for him, Hold On, Let Go. And he asked me, he goes, did you write that? And I said, no, I wish I did. I didn't really know there was this thing, like this whole world of songwriting. I just thought, you know, karaoke was all I really knew. So he was like, well, if you want to make it anywhere in this industry, you have to be a songwriter. And I've loved to write. English was my favorite and creative writing was my favorite all through high school and college, the year that I did go to college. And so after that meeting with him, I sat down. I had taught myself to play guitar when I was a senior in high school. Taught myself. But anyways, I wrote my very first song that night and it just kind of took off from there. I wrote songs in an 8x8 bedroom here in my house for 2 years before I even went and played any of them live. And my husband walked in the room and he's like, hey, you're going to go play at the bar 10 miles from home. And I literally was so scared. I did not eat all day. I thought I was going to throw up. I had stage fright so bad. And then halfway through that show, I was like, okay, I'm either going to do this or I'm going to spend my whole life wondering like, what could I do with music? And it just took off and I started playing anywhere and everywhere that would let me in. I played for free. I played for tips. I played for $100. And what am I saying? I still play for free or $100, even 10 years in, but we try not to do that. But that's kind of just how I started. And I still love to write songs.
Are you into the co-writing at all? Do you have anyone you like to write with?
So I've actually only ever co-wrote 2 songs in my whole career.
Oh, wow. Who's that with?
I wrote my song Odessa that I released a month ago. I co-wrote that with John Hill and my friend Lindsay Buchanan, who had a cut with Caitlin Butts, Hold You Down. That was actually my second co-write I ever did. And then my first co-write was with Arlo Smith out of Nashville and an artist songwriter by the name of Jake Bowers. So nothing ever came out of the first one, but the second one was such a super special song to me that I ended up just cutting it myself. And I'm super thankful that they gave me the chance, because that's also been a challenge, is finding songwriters that want to write with you when you don't have a publishing deal or you don't live in Nashville. And, you know, it's being, like I said, 900 people in my hometown, songwriting isn't a thing here.
Yeah. Odessa is a great one. That one did stand Thank out. You. It's funny you bring that one up. Yeah, I went and listened to all your stuff today, and that one stood out a lot. I really enjoyed it. Yeah. Going off that, like trying to find people to write with. So Oklahoma is a very special place to me. I lived there for a short period of time, but that's where I discovered like artists like you guys and like the Red Dirt scene and all that. And I like fell in love with it, quite frankly. So do you consider yourself to be in like the Red Dirt scene, or where would you put yourself? Like if you had to place yourself in a sound or a genre or whatever you want to put yourself in.
How did I know you were going to ask me that? Okay. So when I first started, I was dead set. I was Red Dirt. I was, you know, Oklahoma, just Red Dirt to the core. But in my mind, Red Dirt is Stoney LaRue, Cross Canadian, Jason Boland, you know, the early stuff like that. Yeah. And I feel like a lot of the what people are classifying as Red Dirt has become more rock instead of Red Dirt country, which I have to think about how the times have evolved and things like that. But when you listen to what the original organic, like Red Dirt was, it wasn't a lot of heavy electric or double pedal drums and heavy cymbals. It was more about the words and, you know, everybody recorded in their little garage. But you know, everything has become so big in production. I do feel like it's had a change, but I would classify myself as, so I was born and raised on 80s and 90s country. I know I have more of a country voice than I do a rock voice. I just try and incorporate a little bit more rock and upbeat guitar, and I love a heavy kick drum.
oh yeah.
So we all of our stuff is really punchy and really drivey. Even like Miranda Lambert's or Pistolini's Hell on Hills, I've kind of had my guys make it a little bit more rock and roll, but I don't really want to say that we're Red Dirt. We call ourselves punky country. So
yeah, I saw that in your bio. That's a good one.
That's kind of worked for us. everybody's the alternative, but I'm, you know, I feel like I'm alternative country, but monkey country fits a lot better.
Yeah. Yeah. It's a good thing too, that you can't really place yourself in a certain box. You don't want to do that.
Yeah. And that's the joys of being a songwriter too. You can write a pop song, you can write a rap song, you can write a country song, or you can know rock and roll. I love music, and I listen to all types of music, jazz, blues, 2000s hip hop.
Oh yeah. That's a good stuff. Have you ever been to Nashville at all? Like wrote over there, or ever tried to write with anyone over there?
So the first song that I ever wrote with Arliss McKinney and Jake Bowers, I used to spend a lot of time in Nashville, pre-COVID actually. And I was going back and forth every month for 2 years. And then I had kind of felt like at that point in time, Nashville really wasn't for me. I didn't really know who I was as an artist, but I do know that what I was experiencing in Nashville really wasn't for me and what I wanted my music to be. So I quit going to Nashville for 6 years. I started doing Texas Regional Radio. I did that for 2 years, and I kind of figured out that some of that really wasn't even for me. So I just really honed in on my craft with my band and our live shows, and really tried to find out who I am as an artist. And so these people can know who I am as a person too, because people are really quick to find out who you truly are. And, you know, I was trying to wear clothes that just weren't me. I look back at my style and my hair, and I was like, what was I thinking? I was just trying to do what was working for others, and it wasn't working for me as an individual. And when I stopped trying to fit in, that's when I started seeing more results and more success in my career.
Okay. It's funny how that works, isn't it? Like you're trying so hard to fit in, and then you just say, fuck it, I'm gonna do my own thing. And then you don't really see the progress until like it hits you one day and like, oh damn, like we're actually doing something here.
So my song Dead of Night that I released in 22 was my big eye opener. I went to the studio, and the next day I dyed my hair black. And
oh, really?
Wolf cut, chopped it off, and I never looked back. And I don't know what it was about that song, but that song really kind of helped steer me into who I was and who I wanted to be as an artist. Like, I love Lynyrd Skynyrd and, like I said, 80s and 90s country, but I love Paramore and, you know, Nickelback. Don't hate me.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. No.
But
we love Nickelback over here.
Yeah. If you don't, I mean, you're lying.
Yeah.
But so being from a town with 900 people, I went through a phase where I was a scene kid, and I had crazy colored hair and purple skinny jeans, and I wore DCs and I skateboarded, and everybody was like, what the hell? I was the odd one out. They called me the vampire girl in high school or in junior high. So I think it was just kind of, I had to go back to my scene roots. And that was when, like I said, my music really started showing its face and seeing the potential of what I needed to do as an artist. And people like it, I hope. Yep. Anyways.
Yeah, no, I love it, and I'm excited to see what's to come. It's funny you mentioned the scene. I know exactly what you're talking about with like the scene kid stuff. Quick story, because this is self-degrading humor, but it's funny as hell. When I was in school, that's when that stuff was really popping, like the My Chemical Romance, all that stuff.
Yep.
And I listened to like the Beatles and like the Doors and stuff, and all my friends, and I don't, and it sounded like from where you were from, it wasn't really cool to be like a scene kid, emo kid.
Oh no. Well, I got lost to hell.
Well, it was kind of cool to be that here. And I was like, oh, well, I got to try that. So I grew my hair out to have like the swooshy hair. You flip your hair over your eye. Only mine doesn't grow like that. I looked like a coconut, like it just blonde coconut, like bowl cut looking thing. It looked terrible.
Oh, so you didn't have the Bieber hair, did you?
It was, you know what? It was Bieber hair. It was Bieber hair before Bieber was around. So maybe I should have kept it in hindsight.
Yeah.
But no, yeah, I got rid of that quick. It did not. I had glasses. I was pretty fat at the time too. It didn't look good. But
see, and that's the thing. I had glasses too, and I would wear those headbands, and my glasses would be making my hair. And I was like, I looked back at my, I found my little camera at my mom's, and I was like, I will burn this thing before I let anybody see this.
That's funny. Oh man. But
the black eyeliner. I just thought I was the coolest thing.
Oh yeah, we had like the guys would wear like the Hot Topic belts with the studs on them and the Van shoes and all that. Like, yeah, no, I'll stick to my polo and khakis. I don't want to break the uniform rule.
Yeah, and my dad is very Southern and very redneck, and he was like, "What the hell are you wearing today?"
Oh yeah. Oh man, I'll be honest. I completely forgot what I was going to ask next, but I want to talk a bit more about. I'll talk a bit more about Nashville. That's where. So I live around Cincinnati. I don't live in Nashville, but that's where Ray's Rowdy is. Like they're all based out of there, so it's cool to. I'm sure like they always love to hear what like people like you, where you're from, like Oklahoma or Texas, what you guys think about Nashville.
Yeah, and you need to tell them to let me come through a couple times.
Oh. Yeah, they do rounds all the time, and whenever you're in town, like we'll have you. It won't be
a
problem at all.
I'll be back in October.
Okay, I will let them know. I promise. But so what do you think about the whole Nashville like label machine out there? Cuz like I was talking to you might know him, Charlie Hickman.
Yeah, ooh. I like Charlie. Yeah. He's cool.
Yeah. Yeah, and I was talking to, I'm trying to get this right, but I was talking to him about how, like, in Nashville, they have, like, all these labels that kind of get artists caught up in it, and it's the typical, like, horror story with, like, the label and all that stuff. You hear time and time again, and that's why a lot of artists in Texas or Oklahoma are, like, you know, like, screw Nashville, like stay away kind of thing. Mm-hmm. And there's like, that's where that rivalry kind of comes from, I think. Yeah. Do you see that at all? Like, what are your thoughts on that overall, I guess?
I will say like record labels are probably a double-edged sword. It's nice that you no longer have to financially pay for things on your own. Like I said, all of my stuff has come from, I worked a full-time job and I just recently got to quit. And all my stuff comes from touring. And I just feel like with your record label, you don't have that financial burden. You don't have to worry about what your next move is. But on the other side, I do know a lot of artists that have actually lost who they are as an artist, and they don't get the say on their creativity. They don't get the say in what kind of music they want to put out, their image on stage. I would say that I would love to have a record label to help me with my social media, to help me find a booking agent, to tell me where I need to go next, to help me put my clothes on because I have awful taste in fashion. But then again, I look at the creative freedom that I have, and I'm the one that believes in myself, and I know that what my next... I guess I don't know what my next move is, but you know, I do know that I'm the one that has everything at stake. And if I put that in the hands of somebody else, they could actually hurt my career more than they could help me. So like I said, it's a double-edged sword. I know a lot of people come into this industry with big stars in their eyes, thinking that they're going to be the next big thing, but you can be just as successful on your own if you just work really hard. It's really hard. It is. But in the end, like, it's worth it.
Right. And it is good to, like, nowadays, like, with the power of, like, social media and stuff, as annoying as it is to deal with the power, using it as a tool, like, it is easier to market your stuff as an artist and connect with more people than it would be, like, 20 years ago, I guess. Do you see that? How are you on social media? Is that hard to get used to? Because like I'm supposed to be in that generation where it's super easy, natural, but I can't figure it out either.
So I'll be 30 this year, and I really tried to dig into TikTok for a while, and I put out my song The Judge and I got banned on TikTok.
Oh, wow, really?
Yes. So they have a huge flag on my account, and everything I post, nothing gets seen. They've actually taken the song off, saying that it is encouraging violent and dangerous activities, that I'm promoting drugs, alcohol, and tobacco. And I'm just like, well, don't be a woman beater, and I'm gonna write a song about you.
But, yeah, it's like you're missing the point, TikTok.
Yeah, but then, you know, Cardi B can put out WAP and it go major viral and have millions of videos made with it. And, you know, it's just I'm really bad at social media. I have no idea what I'm doing.
You might need the go ahead.
No, you. I'm sorry. Go ahead.
No, I was just going to say you might need to find a social media person or something.
I know. Well, I've been trying to get some of these high school kids in town to help me, and none of them will. I have a 12-year-old little girl, and she would just judge me the whole time, so I don't even ask her. I bought me a tripod, and I run around town with my iPhone and take random stupid pictures or videos, and my neighbors will see my TikTok videos, and they're like, I was wondering what you were doing out there. I was like, well, you know, all I do is sit around and TikTok and play on social media all day.
Oh, that's funny. But yeah, it does kind of suck if you're not very social media inclined, and seeing that that's kind of what it's all centered around nowadays. But at the end of the day, it is about your music, you know. So like it's good for true artists, like, you know, like you and a lot of other people who don't really, who can't really master social media. But then you have these people who come on and they go viral after one song, and then what you want to talk about, something controversial, like those guys and gals that get big on one song who don't really have the juice, but they're out here playing festivals and, you know, headlining shows and stuff after like 3 months. It's kind of a weird thing.
I get a little pissed off about that situation, is because these people that are going viral over, you know, singing a karaoke song, and there's no hate at all, but I do feel like, truly believe that you have to go through a development before you're put on these giant festivals. And I'm like, that's how people get hurt personally. Mm-hmm. You know, that's detrimental. They come in, like I said, big stars in their eyes, they get blown up out of proportion, but they're not prepared for the pressure and the live performance that is so big that can make or break somebody. Honestly, if I listen to your record and then I listen to you live and it's got a bunch of auto-tune on it, I personally lose a lot of respect. Now, I understand you have vocal problems or anything like that, but you can truly tell when they come in and lay a bunch of stuff on your vocals and it's cheating. It's not right.
Yeah. But unless that's like what your music's based around, because like you obviously have people who have tracks, but no, I know exactly what you mean. Like, and that was leading into my next question. I wanted to ask about your live show, but like when you do, I feel like as a fan, from what my personal standpoint is, like I have to see someone live to like really lock in.
Yes.
Like that's what keeps you around, the live show. Mm-hmm. And like a lot of times when you do see an artist at like a festival or something, and you're like, oh fuck, like I don't know anymore, like they have that one good song, but I don't know if I'm gonna keep up with, I don't know, it's kind of a, it could be a good thing, bad thing, I don't know, but anyway,
but like you said, describe, social media just kind of puts that out there and can humiliate a person really quickly.
Yeah, and that's unfortunate for them, but you know, it's just kind of the world we live in now. But when it comes to your live show, how would you describe yours? Because I've seen video on your page and everything, and it looks pretty lit. So how would you describe your live show?
Well, it's pretty balls to the wall. Not even going to So I don't have a lot of slow stuff in my songs or in my sets, even when like we still have to play 3-hour sets. Sometimes I very rarely have a slow song in our set because I am very high energy. I'm a high energy person in general. Like you meet me and I'm a spaz. I'm excited about everything. And I don't feel like if I'm going out somewhere, I don't want to feel sad. So I try and put the very minimal, slow, sad songs. I do play 3 songs acoustic when I play 3-hour shows, but mainly we play 2 hours and it's pretty rockin'. I love to jump around. I love to have fun. I love to get the crowd involved because sometimes I have to work really hard to get them excited. But, you know, that's just part of learning to work a crowd, learning what works. And I do feel like, not to be biased, but I feel like I do a really good job of trying to keep people engaged and have tried to add songs that people love and sing along to. So.
Right on. So who do you all have in your band? What instruments you got?
So I have Dylan Murch. He is my steel guitar player. He's been with me for 2 years. I have Stephen Miller, not the Stephen Miller, but he's the Stephen Miller and the Crystal and Arthur's and the Trainwreck band. He plays bass. He's also been with me for 2 years. I have my drummer, Colin O'Grady. He has been with me for 3 months, and I was his first band to ever play in. I actually found him on Facebook Craigslist on a Musicians Wanted page. He had posted, he was playing in a church one time and was playing along with Paramore. And I was like, hey, I need a drummer. And he's like, I've never played in a band before. And I was like, you're hired. But he showed up to auditions and knocked it out of the park. And then I have Matthew Ely. He is my lead guitar player, and he's been with me for about 2 months now, month and a half, 2 months. So part of my band is pretty new. That's been the hardest part, is finding good quality musicians who want to grow with a upcoming artist, and let alone a female. None of our band members drink. None of them do drugs, and that's also been very challenging, but I feel like I've got a pretty good band with me now, and they all believe in the vision. They all are excited to play shows no matter what the situation is. We all have fun, we laugh, and you know, we don't bicker and bitch about each other and with each other, and that's, I've worked really hard to find a band like that. Because I've changed band members like I change underwear. It's been hell.
Man. Yeah, it has to be hard to keep a group together like that. Like being like an up and like, you know, up and coming musician.
Yeah. And after 2022, 2023 was the slowest year I have ever had in my whole career. I played 8 full band shows. It was awful. Oh, I lost my whole band other than my steel player and my bass player. So they stuck it out with me, and I don't ever want to just play 8 shows a year.
Yeah, that's tough. But yeah, so let's talk about Shining, which is going to be out. Well, by the time this drops, the song will already be out, so you don't have to keep anything secret if you don't want to. But comes out August 2nd, which is that Friday?
That's Friday, right? Yeah.
All right. Okay. So, future listeners, it is this past Friday, couple past Fridays, August 2nd. But so let's talk about it. Can you give us a story on what it's about or the message behind it?
All right. So, I feel like in another life, I was a high profile criminal. Let me tell you, I've only ever had one speeding ticket. And that was 3 days before my 21st birthday. But anyways, I'm a huge rule follower. I don't break the law. I'm so scared to go to jail. But anyways, the majority of my music is about breaking the law and doing bad things. And I'm not like that. But anyways, this one, I had to Google 90% of it. And I hate to even say that, but I knew I wanted to write a song about the old, old, probably like 1920s and the Prohibition and things like that. And I've always been fascinated with like West Virginia and the coal mines and the bootlegs and just, you know, the lifestyle out there.
Yeah.
I've never actually been to the Virginias or anywhere on that part of the United States, but I love the movie Lawless. I'm guilty to say that I got a lot of my inspiration from that movie, and I've seen it 500 million times. And then one day I hadn't written a song in a while, and I just sat down and I started writing, and I was like, well, when was the Prohibition? And, you know, cause I'm not up to date on my history. And, crystal meth was actually originated in the 40s. Don't know if you know that, but Google taught me that. But, basically it was just talking about how both sides of the family come together, and they still, you know, they carry on that family tradition of, you know, distilling moonshine and breaking the law and being a feared outlaw. And, you know, I just have always been fascinated with that because, like I said, I follow the rules and I'm so scared to get in trouble, but I just feel like, you know, that's so empowering for people just to kind of hear it. And this song is, in my opinion, my favorite song that I've ever put out. It's super kick-ass, super punchy, and balls to the walls from the time you push play till the time it's over.
Hell yeah. I can't wait for it. So who's the personnel on it? Is your live band the same as in the studio? Is that how it works?
We have not yet, just because I've been piecing band members together for so long. I didn't want to bring any band members that, you know, just really didn't believe in the vision. I'm very territorial and protective over my music and who I have involved in my music. And so I actually have a studio family that I use for all of my songs until, you know, I really make sure my band is on the up and up. On the drums, I usually have a couple different people on the drums, but I have Trent on the drums. But anyway, Steven Adams plays electric on everything that I have out. Steven Jeffries also plays acoustic and does the backups, and he plays a little bit of electric when needed. Kendall Combs plays some electric. I think everybody that I'm naming has played on Shinin. And then John McCall played bass. So John McCall played for Corey Kent, and Stephen Adams plays for Corey Kent, and Milo Deering played dobro. I have some dobro on this one.
Oh, nice.
So, yeah. So
love that.
It definitely reminds me of Dierks Bentley, What Was I Thinking? And when you hear sure now that I say that, you'll be like, hey, it kind of does. So that's kind of the vibe and the style that we went for. So yeah, I think that's that was on Shinin. And then, of course, my producer, LG Hamlin. He's been with me since day one. Walked in his studio, never, just being really nervous because I've had a couple studios try and make me sign a contract that they wanted X amount of my revenue. And I'm like, oh, I don't even make $30. So,
yeah.
But LG has... I can walk in there, play him a song, and he believes and knows my vision. I don't have to sit there and breathe over his shoulder. I'll drive home and then he'll send me the track and he'd be like, what do you think? And I was like, don't change anything. It sounds great. So I have a really good studio that I work with here at home.
Awesome. That's awesome to hear. I'm very excited for Shinin too. That's going to be a good one.
Yeah.
Especially with dobro. I love dobro.
Me too. And I've been wanting a slide guitar or dobro in my band for a long time, but it's so hard to find a really good slide guitar player.
Yeah, I was, so Kurt Ozon, he plays in Luke Combs' band, and he's buddies with us at Raise Rowdy, and I'll have a like a Dobro song pop up on my Spotify, and I'm like, dude, and I'll just send it to him. He's like, yeah, dude, I fucking know. Like, you don't have to send me this shit. Well, he doesn't say that, but I could translate his messages into being like, dude, okay, fine. But awesome. I can't wait for that. It's going to be fun. I guess before we head out here, let's talk about shows or like touring. What do you got going on?
Well, I'm off for the next 3 weeks because I'm ready for a break. Up until then, I have a couple shows in Texas and some shows in Oklahoma. I think I only have one or two acoustic, and then the rest are all band. And then I'm headed back to Nashville in October. So other than that, that's about it right now.
Taking a much needed rest. I don't blame you one bit.
Yes, I'm very tired. But, you awesome. Know, I've had somebody say, well, you're just a weekend warrior. Why are you so tired? And I'm like, well,
oh my God.
Do everything on my own. I book my own shows. I do my own content. I have to get my guys from here to there. I drive us all of our shows. I drive.
Yeah.
I don't let anybody else drive. But, yeah, I'm just ready for a break.
Everyone needs one. I don't blame you one bit. But
I'm super blessed to be busy, but I'm like, woo, I'm a little tired.
Yeah, you don't want to get that burnout. Once you get that burnout going, that's when you get a little worried.
Yeah, and I haven't written a song in maybe 3 months. So I'm like, okay, it's time for a break. And that's when I know that it's time for a break is when I have no inspiration to write music. And because I try and write something every day, and I literally haven't written a single thing in like 3 months.
Well, at least we get a new song coming out in
Hell
a couple
days. It's gonna be so cool. I hope you guys like
Hell
it.
Oh yeah.
I think it's cool we will. Anyways, so
yeah, for sure. But Chrislyn, thanks for hopping on. This was a lot of fun talking to you.
Hey, thank you so much, Sam. I really appreciate you for having me.
Yeah, absolutely. And before we go, if you have any plugs like website, social media, just want to get out there, floor is yours.
Check me out on Facebook, Instagram. I do have a TikTok, but TikTok hates me. It's all Chrislyn Arthur's or Chrislyn Arthur's Music. And then I have a website, ChrislynArthur'sMusic.com. So, and then all my streaming platforms are Chrislyn Arthur's.
Hell yeah. Y'all heard her. So go follow her, check out her music, and make sure to listen to Shinin', which is already out by the time you guys hear this. So if you don't know, go on Spotify and go check it out. And also, while you're at it, check out Raise Rowdy and Rowdy Alternative. We're on all the socials, Instagram, Facebook. Yeah. We got our website. So we'll see you guys next time. Thank you.
All right. Bye.
Look good on your bed, and I bet you can do some crazy things with those hips. You've been turning me on all night, so why don't you and I run and tell your friends who's gonna take you home tonight? Try to make a mess of this simple